This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. In the internet era, the lines between local and national and international news are blurred. If you want to read a story from the newspaper in Helsinki, Finland, or Johannesburg, South Africa, it just takes a few clicks of a mouse or taps on your smartphone and you're there.
That's a news climate that has evolved since Melissa Eddy began covering Europe for the Associated Press in 1997. Her first posting was in Vienna, then Frankfurt, then Berlin. She later became a correspondent for the International Herald Tribune for its last year of existence. That newspaper evolved and is now the international edition of the New York Times, which means Eddy is writing about Germany both for Americans at home and readers in Europe.
Lake Effect's Bonnie North in Berlin on a fellowship caught up with Melissa Eddy, who has been reporting from Germany as long as Angela Merkel has been chancellor there. It's a situation Eddy says will soon be over.
This is definitely the end. I think she really struggled with the decision whether she should run this time. And I know there's been some reporting out of the States that it had to do with Trump and all. I actually believe that decision was taken on her part even before the U.S. election, and it had largely to do with a sense of responsibility that she felt to her party, because she had not really groomed a successor. There was nobody obvious who could take over, but also to the political situation that she had started with her migration policy. And I think she was very aware of the fact that she was responsible for this and felt a need to see that through to the best of her ability. Whether that decision was a wise one, because over the arc of post-war German history, we've seen chancellors who stay into a fourth term tend to stumble in that term, and we're seeing Merkel doing that right now. And so the big question is more, will she serve out the end of this four-year term? Or will she actually end up leaving in some circumstance, whether she's voted out or whether she steps down of her own accord? That's the bigger question right now.
In 2015, when this big wave of migration and Syrian refugees basically hit Europe, she was lauded, at least in the international press, as someone with this huge heart and with this wonderful sense of we are responsible for our fellow human beings. What changed?
It's interesting. I think she actually completely lost the narrative on that, because Germans, the majority of Germans, felt that way as well. And there were these incredibly emotional scenes of Germans who were turning out to help these refugees. They were showing up to greet them as they got off of buses, as they arrived at train stations. They came with food, they came with clothing, they came with toys for the children. It was almost surreal in this way, but it was also very palpable. There were a lot of older Germans, especially, who either remembered being refugees themselves from East Germany coming to West, or going even further back, those who remembered their parents talking about being refugees coming from the eastern parts of Europe that had been German before World War II. And after World War II, there was this massive influx of German refugees, if you will, into German territory. And that really marked the lives of many, many people. And so that outpouring, that generosity, that was all lost as we started to see the rise of attacks in the end of 2015. There were a series, there was a backpack bomber in someone who had come in as a refugee who tried to, he had a bomb in a backpack. It didn't explode, but that was done in Bavaria. And then there was another young refugee who had taken an axe and attacked several people on a train. These were in the summer of 2015. And that was the first time that people started to think, ooh, what have we done? Then there was the ISIS attack that we had on the Christmas market here in Berlin several months later. And that was when fear really started to take over. And then the backlash began really against this idea of we are giving these people so much and they are posing a threat to our society. What is unfortunate is that there are success stories of refugees who are learning German, who are contributing to the economy, and Germany needs people to contribute to the economy. Germany is desperate for young men to fill a lot of just basic labor jobs that the Germans, there are not enough Germans to fill. And unfortunately, that has become a lot more difficult since we've had this political shift, where what happened then is the anger and the backlash of the German people fed into the party of the AfD, the Alternative for Germany party, that runs a very hard anti-refugee line, and who did quite well in the elections last year and are now the strongest opposition force in parliament.
Every German that I've spoken to here, whether they're in the media or not, has kind of quaked in their boots a little bit when you mention the AfD. I say, are you frightened of these people? And they essentially say yes. Is that the feeling you live here? Is that the feeling you're getting from people? Or are people just being somewhat disingenuous about that?
I think there is a genuine fear. Germany has been a very consensus-driven country. And even when you had the center-right party of the Christian Democrats, which is Merkel's party, in government with the center-left party, which is sort of the Labour Party, the Social Democrats, they found a way to agree. You didn't have these kind of other side of the aisle divisive splits that have been around in the United States now for quite a while. So for the first time, they're seeing a party that is not going along with consensus. And that's worrying. Germans are people who crave stability. What we as Americans often find boring, they think is, you know, comfortable, cozy, Gemütlichkeit. They have this word for it. Picketed fences, tidy yards, Sunday afternoon coffees at grandma. They like a predictability to things on many, many levels, including in politics. And so to have that thrown out of whack so vehemently, really, by a party that also, and this is where I think a lot of the fear is coming from, is that the AfD is a party that for the first time is questioning some of the ground principles of post-war Germany's attitude towards its Nazi history. And that has never been done before, and people don't know how to respond to it. And that's what's creating the fear in many cases, I think.
Yeah, wasn't there somebody who stood up in the Bundestag and basically said, essentially, it's just not that important. The Nazi era just wasn't that important.
We've seen several of the leading members of the AfD make comments like that. Alexander Gauland, who's one of the co-leaders, he wasn't speaking in parliament, but he was addressing an assembly somewhere, and he said he thinks it's unfortunate that Germans are taught to concentrate so much on the Nazi past, which was actually just a bird poop in the arc of great German history. And remarks like that make a lot of people uneasy. And then in the East, where there's a whole nother set of issues sort of driving the popularity of the AfD, which are linked to the disenchantment that many people felt with how reunification went down, which in their eyes effectively was that the West came in and sort of usurped their culture, their country. And even though they spoke the same language, you know, people often will make the comparison to me. It would be like if Britain came back and tried to take over the United States again, right? You all had to drink tea, which
drive
we
on the left.
Drive on the left, exactly. You know, it had to be American football, and we'd have to call soccer football. Little things, but things that when you think about it are really essential to your identity and to your way of life and to who you understand yourself as being. And we're seeing now this generation who were teens or in their early 20s when the wall fell, and they're now reaching the ends, you know, they're starting to look towards the ends of their working career trying to make plans for their further lives. They're seeing their children growing up, and they're asking questions about their retirement. Will they have enough money in their funds? Will their jobs still be? And they're looking back to what their parents went through at this time, and their parents were living in a completely different society, a society where they had very little, maybe, but everybody knew what everybody had, and there was this equality, and I think there's this longing for that. So these people then are thinking, we brought down a government that we didn't like in 1989 by taking to the streets. We're going to do that again because we don't like this government, because instead of spending money helping us get jobs or educate our children, they're spending money on these foreigners who are coming in and who are attacking us. And the AFD is very sensitive to that, and they're very savvy about that, and they have been playing into a lot of those fears in a way that people are responding to. And I think it's creating a rift in German society, unlike anything that I've seen in my time here.
How much do you think what happened in the 2016 elections in the U.S. has affected what the AFD is doing? Are they looking across the pond and saying, huh?
Absolutely. They're not even looking. You don't even need to look across the pond. They're opening up their Twitter feeds. They all follow the U.S. president. And if the U.S. president, and this is someone who, if we go back and pause for a moment and think of when Obama campaigned before his first election, he was able to attract 100,000 people around the victory column in the heart of Berlin as a senator campaigning for U.S. president. This is John F. Kennedy, especially in this city, was viewed as a guarantor of safety and security for the city, the then divided city of Berlin. U.S. presidents are held in extremely high regard. So to have a U.S. president now equivocating both sides of the divide on what we saw in Charlottesville, saying that there were bad people on both sides when some of those people were carrying Nazi symbols that are illegal to carry on the open street in this country. You can be arrested and go to jail for it. Of course, that gives them a feeling that, well, if he can do it, so can we.
There are symbols.
Yes.
In a way.
There are. Yes, absolutely.
So what do you think is going to happen going forward if Merkel steps down or does finish out her 4 years but then is gone? Is there any indication about what the government might look like?
At this point, no, there's not any indication what the government might look like. It's one thing we are seeing, interestingly enough, is a rise of the Greens, who are sort of left, definitely left of center. They're definitely pro-refugee, including being pro-environment. And as the Social Democrats, the Labour Party, are losing popularity because they have been unable to translate their support for jobs to the new gig economy that is starting here, a lot of support now is heading to the Greens. They don't have the kind of support that Merkel's party has. However, I think they would probably be in some form represented in a future government. I don't think the AFD, despite it all, has the strength at the federal level that we would see them in government anytime soon in Berlin. But I think, well, in Berlin, I mean, as in Germany, with Berlin as the capital. In the city of Berlin, I don't think so either. But in several of the other former eastern states, we may be seeing governors from the AFD and governments with the AFD possibly participating. They're very, very popular there.
Well, the rise of populism has seemed to be it's going up. I mean, for the last couple of years across Europe and certainly in the U.S., we've been seeing that too. And I find that just troubling in general, that we're on that end of the pendulum swing. It seems to be whether people didn't recover from the 2008 recession, whatever the reasons are, it just seems like there's so much more of this poking its head up over the parapet.
I think that's definitely true. I don't, obviously, you know, in Germany, in the U.S., there are different reasons that are driving this. 2008 for Europe was very difficult. Germany actually managed to fare quite well. The government stepped in and helped provide funding for companies so that they could scale down working hours, but still keep a lot of people in work. And that managed to help, that allowed them to finesse sort of their way through 2008, but the collapse virtually of the euro and Greece, that really battered Europe as a whole. And that is one of the effects that we're seeing with the rise of populism in Europe, is that the European Union as a project, first of all, has been battered by Brexit, with the Brits voting to leave the European Union, which was largely driven by nationalism and populism. But at the same time, we're seeing the rise of nationalism and populism on the eastern flank in countries like Poland, in countries like Hungary. And if you think back to 2015 and when there were all of these refugees coming. At that point, they were arriving in Hungary and Hungary didn't want them. And we had scenes that were unprecedented in modern Europe of people crammed into the train station in Hungary. The trains were not running. The Hungarian government had said, nobody else is leaving. We're not sending them west. And this is where Merkel said, okay, they can come to Germany. That was driven by the Hungarian rejection of all of these refugees. And so now this problem that at the time was in Hungary, sort of Germany took on. So there's a whole, the system is crumbling, and it's disturbing. The European Union has been such a guarantor of prosperity and wealth and ease of travel and, you know, free movement of goods. And it's, I have a hard time imagining the idea of Europe going backwards, and yet there are those who seem very determined to take it in that way.
Yeah, it's almost as if they look at it as an antiquated system and they no longer want to be a part of it.
Right. And there's also in the East the problem that they look at it as, we shook off this outer power from Moscow and now we've got Brussels telling us what to do. This is not what we signed up for. Although it's very different, again, this opens the door for these populist narratives. And I think the European Union has also been extremely bad at you know, promoting its own narrative. And I remember going 2 years ago to Budapest for the first time in over a decade. And it was unbelievable how the streets of the Hungarian capital had been transformed. There were playgrounds, there were new trams, and it was all money. Everywhere you went, there were these little blue flags from the EU saying this project was funded by the European Union. So there definitely are positive aspects of it, and yet the people in those societies are somehow not seeing that and not understanding that. And I think that really is a failing of Western leaders and of European Union leaders, that they haven't been able to transmit what everybody has gained from this project. And of course it's not perfect and it's hard, like democracy is, and it's messy and somebody gets more at some point and gets less at another, right? It's all the give and take of the things that we know. But in a lot of these Eastern European countries, I don't know that they understand how, well, it's not that they don't understand. It's just the societies seem to be lapsing back in this nostalgia for what used to be.
Or what they think used to be.
Or what they think used to be, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I think, you know, here in Germany, they had a word for it, Ostalgie, right? Which was a mishmash of the words Ost for East and Nostalgie for this nostalgia for the East. And a lot of it is very colored, remembering only what was good and forgetting what was really, really hard and how much they really longed for freedom. And one of the fascinating things to me about Merkel is she has never, ever, ever lost sight of that. For a long time, I think she was a little afraid to talk about this idea that she fought as an Easterner. You know, she lived through the collapse of one system. She did not want to relive that. She did not want to live through the collapse of another. And that for her, the idea of freedom and of democracy was hard fought and won, and that she has always sort of kept it very present. And I think maybe not enough, that because she remembers, but there seem to be a lot of others who've forgotten.
Or have chosen
to forget. Right. Yeah. Right.
Are Germans at all looking at the midterm elections, which as we speak are just about a month away?
Yes. My inbox is filled with requests. Can you explain to us? Can you predict for us? And I'm like, no, I don't know. Certainly after the 2016 election, I'm sort of camera shy. There's a real hunger here in Germany to try and understand what is going on in the United States. I think there's a lot of confusion and a lot of... Initially, there was a lot of dismay because the United States taught the Germans democracy. The United States showed them, with the Brits, but they really, especially the West Germans, really looked to the U.S. for that leadership in issues like democracy, human rights. We didn't always get it right, and they were aware of it. They pushed back at times against this, you know, throughout history. You know, in the 80s, we saw street protests during the Iraq War. But at the end of the day, their compass was sort of pointed across the Atlantic. And I really get the sense they feel they've lost that. Their dismay has turned a bit to disillusionment and anger. There's still a little hope that maybe somehow the United States will resume its role of leader at the table of international order. But at the moment, they are very eager to see what the outcomes of the November election will be.
Well, it's going to be interesting on both sides of the pond. Melissa Eddy, I want to thank you so much for giving me time here today. We could talk for another 4 hours and not even scratch the surface, but it's been such a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. I'm thrilled at your interest and your audience's interest in Germany. I think, you know, it is a strong alliance, this transatlantic alliance, and we have to do what we can to keep communication going. So thank you.
Melissa Eddy is a correspondent for The New York Times based in Berlin. She spoke with Lake Effect's Bonnie North, who is in Berlin on a fellowship through the Rias Foundation. You can find a link to the blog Bonnie has written from Germany at wuwm.com.